I've been so left out.
Do you want to swap seats?
Well, not now. I've been excluded.
Come on, this is my seat.
Oh, my goodness.
This is my seat now.
You kick a stink and you don't even...
Oh, yuck. That is so cold.
Oh, I think that's mine.
Where's mine?
Did I drink yours?
There's one over there that I nearly drunk.
That's yours.
Whose is this one?
That's tea. What's that?
That's mine. One's that's yours.
My and my coffee's
that's
over there.
Yours.
It's too cold. It's too cold. Nick, we had a message.
We had a message, but it's on my phone that's recording this.
You can't record a message. Do you want me to try and bring it up?
Do you want a Sherby?
No, the disgusting Aloo's treats. Okay, I'll try and bring it up.
You got to mention the Patreon thing.
When is it recording?
It's recording now.
It's been recording for 5 minutes. Oh, no.
Awkward. I'm going to look for this thing. Who was it from? Wait, no, can't say that.
Is this your phone?
Listener. Yes. Did it?
Okay, why do I have the departure times of a boat ferry service on my phone?
Yes.
That's for the boat over to Stradbroke Island.
I love Straddy.
Did the question come through the email?
No.
Oh, where'd it come through?
LinkedIn.
Oh, so straight to you?
Straight to me.
Okay, well, I can't help you then. You're going to have to get it off your phone.
That's okay. I remember it. We were sent a message. Show me. What are you drawing?
This one. That's a cat, a crocodile, and a shark.
If you've got to tell people what they are for... They're
just
clearly
guess.
Not very good.
This is fantastic.
Oh, that's a cat.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a crocodile.
It is.
That cat's
is
not angry a shark. Because of how you drew it. Is that my cat?
The two most fearsome creatures on the head look like a lizard and a fish.
That's how I see them. They're not. They're nice looking.
You're a vet nurse. Actually, I don't know why I'm criticizing you. It's like saying a paramedic should be able to draw a human.
Exactly.
Let's compare.
Okay, we've got. Round
Nick,
and round.
I've never seen the size of your cat.
Goodness.
Beautiful is one word you could choose to describe.
How else would you describe it?
Enormous. It's like a mountain cat. It's like a Himalayan mountain cat. Just missing teeth. And obviously gets fed too much.
We've had this discussion.
You're a vet nurse.
I've told him.
Like that cat.
She's off the chonk scale. The chonkometer.
Lucky that cat's got free healthcare.
She's beautiful.
One word. What was the question that came through?
Samantha wanted to know, do I get upset when people tease my cat?
Okay, well, do you get upset when people tease your enormous oversized cat?
Tell the people. Yeah, I do actually. Let's talk about it for a second.
All right.
No, here's a novel idea. Stop feeding the cat. I apologise.
I can't wait for my wife to get home. You can tell her that.
No, I would never say this if she's here.
you don't have the guts.
Oh, not at all. And I will never rise to that. The question.
Question was, can you talk about imposter syndrome and how you overcome it?
Overcome it?
Mm-hmm.
Overcome imposter syndrome.
I want to throw it back to you, Nick. Have you ever experienced imposter syndrome? Well,
firstly, what is it?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, I'm going to Google it.
Yeah, you know what? This is not my computer.
Because I know what it is, I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah.
Okay, it is people who will often doubt their skills, talents, or accomplishments. They may have persistently internalized fear of being exposed as a fraud, although they possess the necessary skills.
Fraud.
Despite external evidence of all of their competence, those experiencing this phenomenon do not believe they deserve their success or the luck as they perceive it. It's interesting. So it's those who doubt their skills, talents, and accomplishments, although they obviously possess the skills, fear of being a fraud. Now, I knew what it was, imposter syndrome, but it's interesting to unpack that as a definition.
So they doubt themselves.
Yes.
And so because they might be perceived as a fraud.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So this is an internal response.
Yeah, okay.
Good question, Samantha.
Great question. Good on you, Samantha. Or Sam.
Sam.
Sam Sammy. Or Samantha.
Did she sign it, Samantha?
Oh, she didn't really sign it.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, imposter syndrome. Have you experienced elements of this before, Nick?
Yes.
How? When? Where? Unpack it.
All the time.
All the time?
Not all the time.
You've got 15 years experience at one of the highest clinical levels in the country, and you're scared of being exposed as a fraud. Please. Is that right?
Hmm.
It's true.
Wish I knew this. I'm going to put more pressure on him. How so?
Are you going to start like every now and then? You're
just some subliminal mist.
Just leave it written on little pieces of paper around the house.
So is there an element of confidence at play here?
What do you mean?
Well, if you possess the necessary skills, talents, and accomplishments to sit in the position you sit in, why would you doubt yourself?
Mm. Okay. The first time I got imposter syndrome was when I was on the CCP program.
Okay.
Maybe that was because we didn't have the skills, attributes, and abilities yet because we were on a training program.
Yeah, but you had to get selected for it.
Correct.
Hmm.
Which is still a step up.
Yeah. And the selection should essentially select people that have the skills, attributes, and abilities to do the job.
I can accept that. That's fine. All right. But once you're qualified, you literally have a piece of paper and you have someone who said, Nick qualifies at this level. He has shown everything he needs to, skills, talents, and accomplishments to do this, right? So when Lou graduates in a year's time, she is going to have a piece of paper that says Lou can do this job. Why would you then doubt your ability? Or when have you doubted your ability?
When? Well, like I said, the first time really was that CCP training because, you know, you see all these other people that you hold to high regard go through the same journey as you are about to or are going through, and you hold them to a high regard and you hold them in a higher regard than you hold yourself.
Why?
I don't know. I think you're always your own biggest critic.
Some people are. Some people are their biggest fan.
Well, that's as well. Because I think we're very good at comparing ourselves to other people, but also finding our own faults.
This is true. Recently?
Yes and no. Because I also think sometimes when we look at ways to improve, we automatically navigate to the faults rather than also weighing them against the things that were done well. So if I say, you know, you're going to go do a scenario or you do see a patient and you go, how do I make it better? I navigate to the things that I did wrong or what I perceive to have done wrong, right? So if you're a very reflective person, which I was at the time because I was trying to get better to get on a program, you're constantly looking at your own faults and that festers into maybe you're not good enough to do this. And then during that program is very much...
That escalates quickly.
It does. It does.
Manifests quickly.
And that program is good in the sense that you're in the spotlight every day. You're always having your practice, your interactions, your conduct being not scrutinized is the wrong word, but assessed, right?
I think scrutinized is the right word.
Yeah, it's okay. Perfect.
Let's use the word scrutinized. Yeah. But the idea is for it to improve you. But at times, it's very much about like where are the problems? Let's fix the problems and make them better. So there's a lot of what can be perceived as negativity around what you're doing, and that perpetuates into you're not good enough.
Lou's been smirking.
Have I been?
You've been smirking over there.
Smirker.
Have you suffered from imposter? I mean, this is a great question, right? Have you suffered from this as a student? Have you suffered from this as a vet nurse?
Oh, absolutely, as a vet nurse. As a student, initially, yes. But there was a pinnacle moment that happened in my life where we sat down and we watched a video one day, and it was of these three students. And they all spoke about their experience with imposter syndrome. And I feel as though this isn't a great way of looking at it, but I looked at this and went, you guys just need to have faith in yourself. You've done the hard work. You've done the 3 years. I think they're alumni speaking on their experience. And, you know, I'm just sitting here going, why do you feel this way? You're amazing.
So if you don't back yourself, who's going to back you?
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't want to feel like that. And for me, I went, I don't want to think like that. I want to have faith in myself and I want to have confidence in myself and obviously my abilities within what I've learnt. And so I don't know if I have experienced much of it as a student after that moment in my life because I thought, no, I don't want to put myself down. I want to feel uncomfortable and push myself to do things that make me uncomfortable, but just have a bit of faith in what I know and what I've learned.
How do you balance that then with seeking help? Humility. How do you balance that? Because I actually appreciate what you're saying. I think it's a really great response to hearing these stories.
Mm-hmm. I always am trying to seek feedback, whether it's in the university environment, on placement, wherever that may be. So I think I know what my limits are. I self-reflect quite a lot, but I don't think I ever really let myself spiral to the point where I'm quite upset with, I don't know, where I'm at in life. So, you know, where I am with my skills. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. But basically, I think I just know, I feel like I know where my limits are, or at least where my gaps are. And I'm always happy to ask, why are you doing it this way? Or what have I done wrong? Or how can I improve? But does that mean that I have imposter syndrome if I'm asking these questions? Or does it just mean that I want to do better and have more confidence in myself?
There's elements of emotional maturity here, or emotional intelligence.
Do you think the opposite of imposter syndrome is confidence?
No. Overconfidence. Mm. There's a very confident incompetence that is potentially the direct opposite of that. Someone who is overly confident and clearly doesn't possess the skills. I've met several of them. They reckon if you don't find one of them in the room that you're in, you probably need to look at yourself.
It's probably you.
But, I mean, emotional intelligence is knowing where your limits lie. So knowing what you're good at, but knowing what you're not good at, so then you can seek help. And there's elements of overlay here that I find important, but I want to put Lou on the spot for a second.
Okay.
Because...
All right. I'll have a
because
sherbet.
We met Lou 2 years ago and she was lipping off.
She was at the back throwing popcorn at us.
Yes, I was.
And Lou is quite an outspoken person.
She kept asking questions.
She did. They were good questions.
I just wanted to go home.
And so we had that chat, you know, that maybe we should bring Lou into the podcast because she would give a different perspective. Now, she does that quite regularly. But when we initially approached her, she recoiled like I've never seen.
Recoiled?
Recoiled.
Spell recoiled.
True. No.
This is true.
So I feel like in the student sense, Lou has had this epiphany where she's like, okay, I don't want to suffer from that. And so I'm going to create some strategies that allow me to, you know, spotlight the things I'm good at, but be able to seek help when I need it. Mm-hmm. But when we recognized a skill, she ran from it.
Lou.
Very much so.
And she
she's here now.
But even now she's expressed sometimes this feeling of almost inadequacy, which I would say is imposter syndrome.
Oh my gosh, I have it.
Oh no.
Oh no, I didn't think I did.
Here's the thing, Lou. I've suffered from imposter syndrome my entire career in every single job that I've done. Now, does that mean that I'm lacking emotional intelligence? Rip me apart. I'm not fussed.
No, I think you self-reflect.
Do you think, though, imposter syndrome gets a bad connotation?
Maybe it does. And maybe...
Because maybe imposter syndrome is just emotional maturity. Oh. It's you having the capacity to go, there are things here that I'm not good at, and I'm stepping into a space where there's stuff I'm good at and stuff I'm not good at, and there's a potential that I'm going to make mistakes, and there's going to be a lot of growth required for me to succeed in this space. And isn't that just emotional maturity, right?
But see, I go through that, but I don't sit there and tear myself apart mentally.
But it's imposter syndrome just, tearing yourself
it's
apart.
It's not. I don't think it is. It's like anything, right? Imposter syndrome is it's on a scale.
Okay.
You can have a tiny little bit, little splash, little seasoning, or it can be all-consuming. It's like anxiety, right?
That's also two-dimensional. You can have it three-dimensionally where she's not really suffering it in her student program, but she was suffering it here.
Yeah.
That's three-dimensional.
It's like 50 Shades of Grey, right? It's not black and white. You have it, you don't.
Never seen the movie.
Neither.
Sure. Every single job I've done, I've suffered elements of this. When I was in the army, I rose up to a recon unit, and I always felt slightly inadequate, even though I was recognized and awarded several times. I always felt that
they gave you awards?
Yeah.
What for?
Sometimes it was demotions. But anyway, I had Yeah, I had a couple of good conduct things. No, it was good.
Conduct. Oh, yeah. Good conduct.
Moving on.
Jesus.
Moving into paramedic practice. I mean, this is where it is most relevant. Even when I qualified, I felt inadequate. I did not feel like I was smart enough to hold that position. And the irony was there were people around me who obviously were very confident, who didn't necessarily possess the skills and knowledge, because I would see incorrect things initiated, or I would see conduct that you would question. And it's always intrigued me because there are these people around me through my whole career, even in academia, who move through with this air of confidence that I wish that I could. But then I'm floored by the lack of knowledge and skills that they actually possess. So it's been a challenge.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Do you think, I'll start with you, Lou. Oh. You, Lou.
You, Lou.
That's your new nickname. You, Lou. It's like YOLO, but
it's different.
Different.
It's unusual.
Do you think about people in various careers? It doesn't have to be paramedicine. It could be when you worked at a brewery, or when you, you know, we're here chastising the weight of my cat.
That's enormous. Sorry.
Lucky we can edit stuff. Do you think in the various careers you have, whether it's been working within ambulance services or at a brewery or as a vet, do you think those people that you saw that were exceptionally confident, do you think they were being confident to try and convince other people that they were good enough, or to convince themselves that they were good enough?
I reckon it to convince themselves. It's like that positive self-talk.
This is outward. Also why. This is also why some of the poor treatment initiated towards those below is actually done, is standing on someone's throat to feel tall. It hides a vulnerability. I mean, imposter syndrome, let's face it, is a vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I've felt vulnerable. I've never managed to dispel imposter syndrome myself. But the ways I've reduced it is actually accepting that I'm not perfect, that I do have some skills, and so I'm going to utilize those. But as soon as I feel out of my depth, I'm going to ask for help. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if that person is hierarchically below me. I've already humbled myself in my head to go, you know what? I'm a human, and I'm just going to ask for help. That's challenging for some people. But the more – see, there's people who perceive that as being a weakness, but I think we've got that backwards, because I think it should be a strength. And it's never really been used against me. If anything, it's garnered more respect. But it's also never reduced the imposter syndrome that I've felt.
Well, why do we have imposter syndrome? Like, why do we – have this internal monologue that says you're not good enough to be doing what you're doing? What's driving that?
There's two potential situations. One is where you do have the qualifications to do it, right? So the piece of paper that says you can. And there's the situation where you don't have that, but you're doing the job, right? And I've been in both of these situations. So when you don't have the piece of paper that is the criteria for doing the job, I think what would stem from that is a gap that needs to be filled, or a void. And look, my first academic position, it clearly said that you've got to have a master's, a research, or a PhD. I had neither. And so when I got that job, I felt grossly inadequate because I was next to people who had these pieces of paper. The flip side to that is when you do have the qualification. So if you did have the master's, the PhD, or you do have the bachelor of paramedicine, or you do have the, you know, the grad dip in critical care, you still suffer from elements of that. And I don't know how to answer your question where that would come from.
Is it self-doubt?
It is self-doubt.
Yeah.
Well, it's elements of self-doubt.
See, I do experience all of that. Oh, but I just don't feel like I let it get to the point where I'm so emotionally upset about a situation. I try to problem solve before it gets to that point. So maybe I do have imposter syndrome, but I just try to find solutions.
You don't have as an emotional a response as someone else.
Maybe that's what it was.
Maybe the opposite of having imposter syndrome, which is not having imposter syndrome is someone that is confident and believes they belong and is ready to do the task. And isn't that called like tall poppy syndrome when we just push those people down?
Absolutely. It's very popular here in Australia.
Oh, careful.
Sorry.
we're controversial most of the time.
Like, do you think we kind of bred it ourselves?
It happens because
we
at
wanna,
uni.
It's kind of like, if I want to fit in, I need to have a little bit of self-doubt because I don't want to be the big confident person because they'll
knock me down.
We knock those people down.
You see it at uni. It starts now. It starts in that environment. Where it,
look, like Lou, I can relate.
Do we want humble people?
Yeah.
We need a lot more humility, but at the same time, you also need a little bit of arrogance and ego. You do. You can't do this kind of job.
Look at us.
Every single
arrogant pricks.
Every single person leading. But it is true. Every single person leading needs a little bit of arrogance and ego to do what they do. For an example, if you're in an ambulance and you get out at a multi-vehicle RTC, MVA, whatever you want to call it, if you don't have a little bit of ego, you're not going to have the confidence to get out and stop traffic and then try and bring some order there.
It's a multi-vehicle collision. It's okay, never an accident.
This is true.
Someone's at fault.
You missed my point deliberately.
What if a kangaroo hops out?
It was an accident.
He meant it. Kangaroos
kangaroos
are either stupid or very suicidal.
So are people. It's a balance. It is a balance between humility and ego. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes there's a little bit too much on either side for some people. It's constantly in flux as well.
That's right.
You can't set up this podcast with a little bit of ego. You know what? Let's sit here and lip off about some topics because no one else is.
And then record it.
And broadcast it. There are some people who support us. There are some people who criticize us. And we keep doing what we're doing, right? Now, I would never suggest I'm qualified to run a radio station or a podcast or even a university program, and yet I've done all three. Now, whether I've done them badly.
You've run a radio station?
Years ago.
Really?
Community radio station.
What?
Yeah, it's overseas. Yeah.
What did you talk about?
But absolute rubbish.
AM breakfast radio or?
No, are you serious? Do you think I would get the primetime slot?
It was literally
the 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. slot.
I reckon the three of us could run a very successful primetime breakfast radio.
Okay, you need a little bit of humility there, Nick. But you need a little bit of ego to make that happen.
You heard the dribble they talk about.
Yes. But you can relate this to paramedics because you need a little bit of humility and you need a little bit of ego. Mm. Too much of either one of those is going to be a bad thing. Now, too much ego puts you in that overconfident, incompetent stage, and too much humility can actually put you in the imposter syndrome and the emotional response to that stage, whereas I think you can be somewhat in the middle because there's certain things I know I do well, and so I'm happy to lead people in those, right? Climbing up a mountain is one of them, right? Jumping out of a plane is another.
I've never seen you climb.
That's fair. I've got kids now.
That's true.
And actually, you know what? Even just on that point, that's an interesting point you even raise, is I was actually just reflecting in my head the last time I did guide someone up a vertical surface, and it would be 8 or 9 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And so if I very comfortably and confidently said to Lou, hey, come up this rock wall.
Don't do it, Lou.
If this is where you put people at risk, and paramedic care can be related here, is you've got to be aware of your currency or your ability, regardless of which way the seesaws are sliding. So I find it interesting because I've definitely suffered from imposter syndrome, even right up in these academic positions that I currently am working in. I always assume there's going to be someone who is going to be better than me to run it. But at the same time, when people criticize me, one of the strategies I use is, cool, man, show me how to do it better. Mm-hmm. And they either can and I can learn something by humbling myself, or they can't and I can sit there going, I know which side of the seesaw you sit on. Mm-hmm. This is not constructive. This is not helpful. Now, I don't know if that, it does apply to paramedic care, but it is also difficult because of the pace of what we're expected to do in certain situations. Mm-hmm. But regardless of that pace, you can still ask for help if you're willing to humble yourself to do it. But I mean, if someone like, Nick at a critical care level can suffer from imposter syndrome, I think anyone can.
Yeah.
Right down to the first year student. Mm-hmm. But we need strategies to recognize it and then manage it.
Mm. How do you manage it, Lou?
It's all in my mind.
That's all in you.
No, I know that sounds silly, but I think knowing how hard I've worked and reminding myself, like, you didn't just get here overnight. Like, you've studied, you've put a lot of effort into this. Have a bit of faith in yourself to make decisions and learn and want to learn. So I guess for me, it's having just like backing myself is the biggest thing, backing myself and having confidence to go like, it's okay, you know this, or at least if you don't know it, you can find it out, you can figure it out somehow. So I like to find solutions or strategies to problem solve my issues. But it's all a mind game for me where I'm like, nope, you're not going to be negative about this. You're going to learn from this situation and find a solution.
What if you hurt someone?
Why? So why have I hurt someone?
You made a mistake.
Yeah.
You made a clinical error in judgment.
Yeah. So as you know, we've done a podcast on this and it's everyone makes mistakes, but it's why did you make the mistake? And so for me, I like to, I guess, pull it apart a little bit and go, but why did that happen in the first place and learn from that situation? I don't know.
I like it.
I don't know. But then maybe I'm like, oh, was that not good?
The point of this is
good strategy.
I don't actually think any of us are supposed to know. And the irony of the topic is imposter syndrome. It's gaps in our own knowledge. So, even finishing that with, gee, I don't actually know.
I know, right? I'm like, I don't even know if I'm doing the right thing.
I guess something I like to do is when you get that self-doubt and that internal monologue of, I'm not good enough. They don't think I'm good enough. You go, well, who are they?
Mm.
Who are these people, these fictitious people in your mind that you think are sitting around drinking whiskey going, oh, that Nick guy is an asshole.
They probably
what if
are.
They're not fictitious, right? Now I can relate it to a case where I had made my mind up about what was wrong with this patient and I would move down a certain treatment pathway. Mm. And it was the backup crew who disagreed with me so confidently that I actually changed. Fast forward, it was the wrong decision. I was right. I was right, and I had been influenced by overconfidence. And fast forward again, in the case review, the wrong people refused to acknowledge it. It floored me. There was such a lack of emotional intelligence in their ability to reflect. It floored me. But what I tried to unpack is, why would I let them influence me?
Mm.
Why did I lack the same confidence that they had when they were wrong? I was actually right, but the patient had not received the care needed because I had been influenced by that. So what if they're not fictitious? How do you manage that? Now, I mean, this is years ago, but I'm sure there's junior paramedics out there who have experienced something similar.
Well, I guess it's about picking your battles, right? Yeah. Like if I went and jumped up and down at every single little thing that I didn't think was going right in my workplaces, then I wouldn't be a very popular person.
This was big.
Right?
This was big. This was the difference between asthma and APO.
Oh.
This hurt the patient.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, this was bad.
But I think you have to pick your battles.
Well, I should have picked that battle. The question is, why didn't I? Why did I lack the confidence they had when I had made my decision based on my own clinical knowledge and the presentation of the patient? I did everything that I knew how, and yet they came and countered it so confidently that I essentially criticized myself and flipped.
Could you have met them in the middle?
Well, you can't really with that. It's either going to be A or B. You can't treat both.
Well, I can.
Well, you can. This is awkward. This is a whole nother conversation.
Is this where we talked about like a spectrum though?
A little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this.
Yeah.
Spray dab.
Up, down.
It got better. All good.
Yeah, the question I asked from a psychological perspective is, and see, I've talked to other people about this in the past too, who are much higher than me.
Okay, here's the thing, because I have this conundrum sometimes in my workplace, is you get conflict. And I like to approach it from a position of curiosity. So if someone says, you're wrong.
Yes, good.
You're wrong. Lou, you're wrong.
Why?
Exactly.
Yeah, why? Tell
me. Why am I wrong? I'm curious as to why you think this couldn't possibly be APO.
Hmm.
I'm curious as to why you think my treatment path is going to harm this patient. I'm curious as to why you think we shouldn't continue on this pathway and why you think that another diagnosis is more likely going to happen. is it possible that the patient could be having both conditions? I'm using your situation as an example. And is it reasonable and safe if we just go down this pathway?
So I appreciate that. I think that's a really good strategy and it's something that a lot of people need to unpack. Here's the thing, is if I have come in and I disagree with them, I'm far more inclined to be curious. Oh, okay. Well, I thought it was this. But it's when I'm challenged that I have been less curious and more, holy shit.
Is it because you weren't expecting to be challenged?
Potentially. There's no prep. When you come in over the top, you are prepared because you listened
and
you're going
and you're walking in.
Yeah, yeah. But when you're the one who's there, Johnny on the spot, there's a different dynamic. And I think it probably does come down to preparedness. But I guess we can rehearse this in our heads just from having these conversations. And that's why I think it's so important. You know, look, we've had these conversations before and I've shared something there that actually makes me quite vulnerable. The irony is there's some people who are going to be grateful for that. Thanks, Sonny. I learned a lot. There's other people who are going to criticize me. You're a dickhead, Sonny. That's okay. Again, it's the different levels of that seesaw. But I think we've got to get more comfortable with people sharing these vulnerable situations that they experienced so that less people experience them because they're better prepared. And if we're better prepared to manage things like imposter syndrome or conflict, if we can get curious about things, we're going to treat, manage, and improve patients better.
If we go back to the idea that imposter syndrome is this perception of you don't think you're good enough, and that's being driven by you don't think your peers think you're good enough, mm-hmm. Why does their opinion matter, Lou?
Does it matter?
Does
their opinion matter?
From a position of
I think it matters.
Mental health safety, yes. Sometimes from a position of physical safety, yes.
Yes. So you just have
people need to belong in order to feel safe.
This is very true. This is very true. And I will say I have probably upset some people as a student.
Don't believe it.
Peers. Because I'm a little bit outspoken.
What?
Never.
And there's things that I don't always agree on or...
I would say good for you.
I think we as humans want to inherently be part of a tribe.
I know.
We've been doing it for thousands of years, right?
Yeah.
But you can't always, it's not politics, right? You're not going to stand up and just toe the party line to keep the party happy. Mm. Sometimes you need to just think your own thoughts and do your own things.
Autonomy.
What's also basic leadership? It's leading.
Yeah.
A leader is often a weirdo once they get started, but once they get a following, then they're successful.
No one liked Winston Churchill.
Mm.
Then what happened? I can't remember. I didn't do history at school.
You're looking at me like I did it.
Where was Winston Churchill going?
I don't know. Well, no one liked him until I needed him.
Lou, you spoke about being an outlier, though.
Yeah,
I guess like with imposter syndrome, right? You like, it's inherently driven by this idea that you don't think you're good enough because other people don't think you're good enough.
Mm.
But their opinion doesn't always need to matter.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the way to deal with imposter syndrome is to be able to filter what views of other people of yourself are important and not important.
Yes.
Because you have to take some stuff on board in order to grow.
Yes.
If I don't listen to Sonny
yeah.
when he's saying, Here's some feedback about, you know, how you view the world, how you approach things, how you do business, then how am I going to grow without that external feedback?
Yes.
But I always have to balance that against, well, I don't need to take on everything Sonny says, right?
Yeah.
Because what's most important is yourself.
Yeah.
What's really most important are your patients.
Mm-hmm.
Second most important thing, well, is yourself.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think I'm more important than the patient. That's just me.
It takes years.
You are your own. You are the most important thing. Yeah. Your patients can come second.
They have to come second or you won't be able to do your job properly.
All right.
If you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of the patient. Someone I run with, I'm more important. Is that ego or is that just fact?
Too confident. Knock them down.
Yeah. Tall poppy syndrome.
Look, I was part of a briefing session for a humanitarian deployment months ago where they literally, the person who was delivering the session said, you've got to understand we put the mission first before everyone else. And I sat there going, you can't. Yeah. By definition, you can't. If you put the mission first and don't have people, the mission doesn't happen. You have to put the person first and the mission second.
Hmm.
And it was very much a divided room, people putting it first. But, you know.
Isn't that why danger is sort of first when you do your primary survey?
It's supposed
to be. Because without the paramedic.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
Danger's not actually first, though.
It's omnipresent.
It's about third.
Omnipresent. Namaste.
Yeah.
Look, Samantha, I don't know if we actually answered your question about imposter syndrome.
We've just been rattling for 35 minutes and 23 seconds.
What you can take away from this is that more people suffer from this than actually acknowledge it.
Are you saying I don't acknowledge it?
No, you did acknowledge
it. No, I did.
Yeah,
I do have it.
All of us do in some respect, but there are those who are masking elements of it through overconfidence. And I think if there's any takeaways, that is a dangerous place to find yourself. And so if we can approach this from a human perspective, a humility perspective, a humble perspective, you're probably going to find ways that you can reduce the impact of it.
The negative impact.
The negative impact, yeah.
That's absolutely what I don't let affect me, I think, is that the negative side of it.
Because a positive side of it is that you can seek help and learn.
And grow, yes.
And so then pass that
would you
on.
Say that imposter syndrome isn't necessarily a bad thing?
I reckon.
It can be led.
Because it gets this label, oh, you have imposter syndrome, oh, it's bad, I shouldn't feel this way, blah, blah, blah.
It's safe, right?
I think it's part of our survival instinct, the same way we run away from the saber-toothed tiger.
Mm. Not Sunny. He's running towards it.
Because I didn't see it. I was looking at a butterfly. Oh, dear. Well, Samantha.
Sorry, mate.
Samantha, I hope we've answered your question. We probably haven't.
But we appreciate the support. We appreciate the questions. We would appreciate people chiming in, letting us know what they think about imposter syndrome and their own experiences.
Do you have an imposter syndrome with those drawings?
No, she was
overconfidence
with those.
Are you serious? This is perfect.
That cat is perfect.
That crocodile looks like a
sausage roll.
I guess a chocolate lizard.
Lou, I get some feedback for you.
Yeah.
Stick to paramedicine.
I know, right? All right.
Reach out to us. Shiftextension.org is the website.
Yeah.
Hello@theshiftextension.org.
Check out our Patreon. We have memberships.
What's on Patreon?
We've got a couple training sessions coming up.
Oh, my gosh, training sessions. If you remember, you come along for free.
We put these on specifically, Lou, because a lot of what we just talked about with imposter syndrome and unsafe places is that we are attempting to provide a fun and enjoyable and safe place for student paramedics to come and actually just practice their skills in a supportive environment, which is sometimes seldom found. So have a look. Check it out. We've got dates on the website.
20-something of March.
That's helpful.
Not March, January.
Are you sure?
I have no idea.
Check the website.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.